Great time of the year to get together with friends and family, and often those gatherings involve a lot of food, which I love. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Chef Terry Milligan likes food, too. She's a culinary instructor and food writer. She has a bunch of ideas for making your holiday meals special, and always great to have her. Chef Terry Milligan, welcome back to the show. Thank you for taking time to be with us.
Oh, well, I'm always happy to be on the show, and as always, always happy to share recipes with your listeners.
Well, it's always so much to have you with us. It's always so much fun. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. And as you listen, are you all set for your holiday meal plans? Or yeah, I'm wondering if our listeners could use some advice. Maybe a favorite dish to share as well. That would be fun, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You know, I'm wondering, when I'm planning for a big meal, and I've all prepared at our home, probably, I think the largest is probably around 100 people.
Oh, that's quite large.
Yeah, and in those situations, I'm writing everything down. I've got a plan that might start, a few days ahead of time at least.
Well, at least I'd say that's like planning for a restaurant. I feel like I'm back at my old restaurant planning for New Year's Eve. There was always a game plan, believe me.
When do you start planning for a big holiday meal? You know, a normal group of maybe 8 to 12 people.
Well, I am in your neck of the woods with that one. I like to write down things, and I like to, I call it my kind of my meal game plan. I like to put down a menu, what I want to serve, and also think about how long it's going to take me to make some of these things. You always want to be with your guests during that time, so it's nice to be able to make a lot of the things that you're going to be serving ahead of time so that you don't have to distract yourself too much from your guests. Plus, you know that it's the recipe work.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely.
I avoid trying to do recipes that are new unless I really feel confident.
I understand perfectly. Well, how different is it for you, or for anybody, for say a meal for six as opposed to maybe four times that many people?
Well, I'm sorry. How different is it?
Yeah.
Well, for six, you can easily do your shopping in one day, for sure. And that's one of the things I like to do, too, is make sure you've really got a good list of what you want to do at the grocery stores and what stops you need to make. So I always think I've got one day that I just devote to getting the ingredients if it's going to be a group that you have to go to a couple of different spots. And then kind of get everything into the kitchen, because if you get home and all of a sudden you have six grocery bags, that can be kind of, it takes you an hour just to get your
yep.
grips. So I like to do that ahead of time. And then I really do a plan, even if it's six or 60. I like to just write down what I'm going to do ahead of time. And that's just kind of me. I like to, from having a restaurant, I always have lists and I like to check them off so I know that I've done something and I don't want to get distracted and hop from one thing to the other. I like to get certain things done so they're done.
Yeah, I like to even write down timing of starting this, putting this in the oven or, you know, whatever. And then on the day of, I don't have to think about it so much.
Exactly. And even bringing out serving dishes ahead of time. So, and I put, I hate it, you know, I sound like my mother at sometimes. I put little sticky notes on them so that I know what I want to put on each
yeah.
platter, especially if it's going to be a big kind of appetizer or a buffet type thing.
Our guest today, Chef Terry Milligan, culinary instructor and writer. She has a great website, by the way. I've really had a lot of fun going over it. And looking at all the different things on it. And you can get to that. We'll tell you how to get to that in just a minute. But you may have a question or comment or maybe an experience to share about your holiday cooking. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. The title of that page, just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can post your questions, comments, or maybe you've got some nice food photos We'd, of course, love to see them as well. There's the meal itself, and we'll get to that, but it's also nice to have some things to nibble on beforehand.
Exactly.
And you have some great ones on your site. You have a very fun pigskin cheese ball recipe to share.
I do, and that I just actually made that a couple of weeks ago. I have an article coming out in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on the 10th, and it's on cheese balls. So I had to put my mind at work and come up with creative cheese balls. And the one that I really liked was this pigskin cheese ball, which is basically a cheese ball shaped like a football, and then it's wrapped or has crumbled bacon all over it. Yep. And then for the laces, you use little strips of, you could use mozzarella cheese. I used a white cheddar, but it makes the little laces. And it's fun for kids to make as well. I actually had a group of two boys that were working with me, I think, but against their will. But they looked cute in the photo. But they really liked eating the bacon as well. They didn't really care about the football that much, but they really enjoyed the bacon.
So, yeah, as you say in your notes, you need to make extra bacon.
Especially if you've got a couple of young boys that are helping, and they got a kick out of actually making the football, too. But they really liked eating the bacon.
Oh, man. You have something called, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's just kind of a fun take on the cheese ball. Another one that I did that I don't have on the website yet was I made one in the shape of a pine cone, and I used almonds to make it look like a pine cone. And that was a really pretty centerpiece, as the football could be a centerpiece, too.
Yeah, that's very cool. I know you have, and we'll be talking about this, desserts as centerpieces, too. But you've this appetizers, you've got one that you've got a section on your site that's called 6 in 60.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's six appetizers that can be made, if you're very organized, in 60 minutes. And as I said in the article, it does not include shopping time. So you do have to shop, but you could probably get everything you need at one store. So it's not that bad. But it's basically how you could put together a appetizer party for about 6 to 8 people on the sly. But as I said, you find out that morning that somebody's invited a couple of couples over and it's at your house in 5 hours. What am I going to do? And there's some fun recipes that are a lot of them using things that you can get pre-bought and then, as I call it, funk it up a little bit. So maybe you're going to get some of those olives in the olive area of your grocery store, but make them a little more interesting with some herbs and warm them up a little bit in the oven. Getting some soup you could buy either canned or a lot of times I work at the Milwaukee Public Market. There's a great soup bar there. You could get some pre-soup there, and you put it in those little decorative shot glasses, and I made little mini mini cheese sandwiches, and I put them on top with just a little toothpick through.
Oh.
It's a little soup and sandwich, but in a little shooter glass, and they're fun, and I got to tell you, you don't have to make more than 2 or 3 sandwiches, because you're just going to be cutting them into little triangles. So you don't even have to do that much work on that one. And then I have some Brussels sprouts on there that you just roast in the oven and make little skewers out of. And one of my favorites is a Caesar salad on a little endive leaf. So you just buy a little Caesar salad kit. You make the Caesar salad. Everything's in there, including the dressing. But you put it in about a tablespoon on the bottom of each of a little endive leaf, and you've got little Caesar salad, individual kind of appetizer Caesar salads.
I just love all those. And they look wonderful.
And they do look wonderful. At the end, you also have to make sure you have a glass of wine. That's what I always say. Minute 51 to 59 is putting the shooters, setting up the shooters. But then the last minute, the 60th minute, is pouring a glass of wine for yourself because you got through it. But I have to tell you, I did have to go through this. It sounded so good when I came up with the idea to write this article. And then all of a sudden, I had to actually do it.
And you did it.
But I did. One of the things that's on there, Larry, that's very fun, and anybody can do this, is I like make your guests actually put together the appetizer. And I do that by making something called a crostini bar. So all you have to get is some French bread, cut it into some slices. If you have time, toast them a bit, and then have different types of toppings so people can make their own crostinis. You could have pestos, different types of pestos, different cheeses, olive spreads, and people can just make their own. Plus, it's a nice thing to put out on an appetizer area. It takes up some room, and people kind of enjoy being creative, I think.
Oh, I definitely agree with that. Terry Milligan, our guest today, as we talk with her about holiday cooking, looking forward to your questions or comments or your experiences to share during the holiday season with your cooking. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page. Our Facebook page is called The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post questions or comments right there on our Facebook page. We'd certainly love to hear from you. As I looked at your website, by the way, Terry, I really like your logo, your header.
Thank you. I live in Door County. For those of you who might not know my background, I do live in Door County, and I had a local artist put that together for me. And what was kind of interesting about that, with the day and age now of everybody doing things digitalized, he had to actually, I have a carrot on my logo for those of you who aren't on my website and haven't seen it, it's an M with a carrot through it. He had to actually paint the carrot. And he was not used to having to actually go back and doing something the old-fashioned way of actually painting it. And he said he had a lot of fun, and he did a great job. So I have a hand-painted carrot on there that he created for my logo.
It's really pretty. I thought, oh, man. And it's simple in a way, but it's just a lovely website.
Thank you.
Love how it's set up, actually. And I was looking at your classes. They look great.
I teach all through Wisconsin. A lot of listeners who live in the Milwaukee area might know me from the Milwaukee Public Market. I'm actually going down there tomorrow, and I'm teaching a class on holiday sides. There still are a few spots left. It's only $29. It's a demo class at night. I think it starts at 5:30, but we're going to do four kind of different different ideas for holiday sides. And then those people that are there get to taste some of those items that I'm making.
Yeah, the classes look like a lot of fun for sure. Let's take some calls. Barbara in Eau Claire, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I was wondering if something has occurred in how turkeys are produced today that has created such a scare about putting stuffing in the turkey. It's like everybody's afraid to stuff it. We all know you have to cook the turkey enough. But when I was younger, nobody worried about this. And we didn't seem to get sick. My family did survive that I stuffed the turkey, so we didn't get sick. Is there anything how turkeys are made today, you know, factory farming or something like this?
Well, I don't know about that. I know that the USDA now does say that they don't recommend stuffing a turkey. And I think it's just maybe food safety has progressed a little bit more than it was. People didn't talk about it as much. But I'm in your boat there where we always had a stuffed turkey. And I personally do stuff my turkey. I think the big thing is to make sure you don't let it set there stuffed until you only stuff it right when you're going to be putting it in the oven. And the other big thing is temperature-wise on that. You know, you want to make sure that the actual stuffing gets to the right temperature so it's cooked through. But take that stuffing out of the bird right after it comes out. So
okay. Yeah,
my dad was always one that wanted stuffing in the birds too. So yeah. It is a safety thing that I think has just come to age a little bit more with regulations and things about food safety tips.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. I like stuffing that's been in the bird, too, to be perfect.
It's just juicier, I know. You do have to be careful with reheating things, though. So, you know, do put that in mind when you are making big meals and you have to have leftovers. So I had some information in the paper last week about tips on leftovers, and there's a link on my site back to that article because it was related more to Thanksgiving. But one thing people should remember is there's a rule called the 2-2-4 rule. And what it is hot perishable foods should not sit out longer than 2 hours. So if your meal's over, you want those foods to cool down before you put them in the fridge. But after 2 hours, the USDA is going to say that's not safe to eat. It goes into what's called a danger zone for bacteria. You also want to make sure it's only 2 inches in depth in a storage container. So that is another thing that helps eliminate getting bacteria growing. You want to have low, have things spread out more than piled on top of each other. And the other thing, which is the four, is 4 days is the amount of time a refrigerated leftover is safe to eat. So think of that 2-2-4 when you are doing a big holiday meal and you want to keep things.
I think I violated those rules.
Well, as I said in the article, a lot of people just go and look in the refrigerator and graze just straight up in the refrigerator. So that, all rules are gone at that point. But
and Judith says she likes her stuffing out of the bird because she likes it crispier. Now, I like it kind of mushier, to be perfectly honest.
Well, you know, you can please both and have a little out and a little in.
There you go. Terry Milligan, our guest today, who is a culinary instructor and writer and former owner and executive chef at the Inn at Christopher's in Sister Bay. Join in with your questions or comments as we talk holiday cooking, or maybe you've got some recipes of your own to share or some experiences to share. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show for that. Love to hear from you. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we're talking about wonderful ideas for holiday feasts with Chef Terry Milligan. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. I want to move on to the main meal, and I think side dishes provide so much variety. They're often a lot of fun. This year for Thanksgiving, someone brought the traditional green bean casserole. But this time, this is someone who's a pretty good cook. And this time, the green beans were crisp.
Oh.
Much different. And really, it was really good. I looked at that casserole and I thought, the old green bean casserole. But then when I launched into it, I thought, oh, this is nice.
Yeah, well, they're probably using fresh green beans over the old canned.
They were.
So that makes a big difference. And by getting those fresh green beans, you can blanch them, you know, to keep them crisp, but cook them just a little bit, keep the color, and then just kind of finish them off probably. I bet that's what they did in the casserole. So, and obviously we'd like to now use as many fresh vegetables as possible so that we get more nutrients out of everything.
Oh, absolutely. And for you, what makes a great side dish?
Boy, well, I like side dishes that kind of encompass, are easy, but also encompass a variety of flavors. So one of my favorite new side dishes is a zucchini red bell pepper and tomato gratin.
Mm.
So it's fresh. You can use either the green zucchini or yellow squash. Actually, I'm going to make it today because I'm doing it in my class tomorrow, and I have to make some samples, and we're going to use both of those colors. Some red bell pepper, and then I've got some yellow and red tomatoes that I'm going to put on top. A little fresh basil, there's some red onion in it, and then a little bit of panko breadcrumbs, the little Japanese breadcrumbs, tossed with some freshly grated Parmesan cheese. I really prefer to just grate my own cheese off of a wedge. You get a lot more of a delicate kind of shred than those pre-bought packages. So all you need is a little grater, and you can, those, it's what's so nice about our markets these days, even if it's a big box type market, they've all got the wedges of the Parmesan cheese now. And it just stays, I think, has a not much better taste than the pre-shredded ones.
Oh,
but
I agree.
That's a great new one. And you can make it ahead of time. I'm making it today because I have over 25 people in a class tomorrow, and I need to make sure they all get a sample. So I'm going to make it today, and we will serve it tomorrow for a sample during my class.
Sounds wonderful. You know, I wanted to ask you about panko breadcrumbs because just suddenly I'm seeing so many recipes that are specifying panko breadcrumbs. What is it about those breadcrumbs that makes them different from like the normal can you might buy in the grocery store?
Well, it's the dryness kind of to them. It's really a Japanese breadcrumb, that style breadcrumb, and not made in Japan, but a style of breadcrumb that's become popular in Japan because they used it as a coating for deep fried foods, because it has a tendency to keep its shape better. It's a little lighter and crisper than a regular breadcrumb. And if I'm not mistaken, they get that by kind of drying it during the prep process of getting those breadcrumbs made. So it's made with a crustless bread as well, so it's all that kind of whitish, kind of light and crisp flavor. So when you put it on top of a gratin, you're going to get something that's a lot crisper than the packaged breadcrumbs that you get in a kind of a cylinder container. Yep. Are very, very fine. So that's kind of okay if you're going to make a meatball.
Yep.
And you just are using it as binding. But if you want to put it on top, you want that kind of crisp crunch when you get into it. And that's what the panko does.
That's what it does. Okay, Susan in Madison has a comment. Hi, Susan. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I had a question and a comment. I had taken classes from Carrie and at Christopher's years ago, and I've moved to Madison, and I wondered if she teaches classes in Madison. And I also wanted to tell her that two of my favorite recipes that she taught are ones that have been favorites of my guests. One of those is a savory quiche with mushrooms, and the other is lobster quesadillas.
Mmm.
Oh.
I should put that on my website, especially the lobster quesadilla. Those are good. And what's nice about that dish is, I'll make sure I get that on before the end of the day. What's nice about that is you don't need a lot of lobster, but you do get that lobster flavor in those quesadillas. And I serve that, if I'm not mistaken, with the mango salsa.
Yes, you did. Yeah. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. So it's really an interesting and fancy kind of dish for the holidays.
Oh, I want to run out right now and get.
And I thank you for liking my classes and liking the Inn at Christopher's when I was there. I appreciate that. We had the restaurant for over 22 years, and I did classes there all the time. So it was always fun to have people from all over the state and Midwest coming to those classes.
Oh, I had been from Fox Point, and you used to be from Fox Point.
Yes,
so
I lived in Fox Point.
I'm hoping you'll come to Madison.
Well, we'll have to try. I just hooked up with somebody in Appleton. I now teach at a place called the Wire Whisk in Appleton, so I'll have to work on Madison, and there's quite a few places over there. So I bet I can put my thinking cap on, and we can make some appearances there. I had been asked to do a class up at the Car Valley Cheese, which is close to Madison.
Yes.
So I would come there.
Yep. Well, good. Well, you'll probably see me there next year. So on my website, you can just sign up to get emails from me, and I always say where I'm going to be. But they asked me this past year, and I just couldn't get it into my schedule. But we are planning on doing it next year, so I guess you'll see me close.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Susan. Appreciate your call. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. Oh, I can't wait to see that lobster quesadilla recipe with mango salsa. Boy, does that sound good. Oh.
Yeah, that's a while ago. She's really gone to my classes. I have to dig that one out. I haven't made that for a while, but it is delicious. And it's easy to make. You make the lobster filling ahead of time and then just put the quesadillas together, and not hard at all.
Oh, we had a Facebook comment from Starla. This year I decided to cook the turkey the day before Thanksgiving rather than trying to get everything done at once. I removed all the meat from the carcass but left the wings and drumsticks whole, placed it in baking pans with a little broth, covered it with foil, reheated it at 350 for about 45 minutes. I also made the gravy on Wednesday. This really simplified everything and greatly reduced the amount of mess after dinner.
Well, that's a great tip, and as I have never done that, but I think she has two key things there. One, she took the meat off the bird, and that goes me back to my safety tips,
mm-hmm.
because you do want to take the meat off of the bone. You don't want to have those bones staying overnight with the meat on it. The drumsticks are fine, of course. And the other thing is the way she prepared it, and that is a great tip for your listeners. that little bit of stock in the bottom of a pan helps steam and keep the meat moist. So you can do that with almost anything. When you reheat something in the oven that's a meat like that, just putting a little bit of, if it's a beef, put some beef stock. If it's chicken or turkey, you can use chicken broth or vegetable stock. And you can buy those now very nicely made in the stores. Look for one that's low sodium, just for health reasons. And by covering it and steaming it, like, that's a great way to reheat things.
Oh, absolutely. We had two turkeys for Thanksgiving this year. One was done in the oven, the other done on a Weber grill. And I've had excellent results with a Weber charcoal grill cooking a turkey. If you follow the directions.
That's always the tip, isn't it? Follow the directions.
the number of briquettes that they recommend, you know, they hire these folks to test this out, I figure Weber does.
They
so
do.
Why don't I follow what they suggest? And it really does turn out picture perfect when you kind of follow the directions.
Yeah, and reading them before you're actually doing the recipe is always helpful, too. I don't know if you're, I'm kind of one of those, you know, I think I know it all, so I don't read the recipe and then get into the middle of it and find out I am either missing something or needed to do something ahead of time. So read the recipes through.
Well, I didn't prepare that turkey this year, but someone else did and did a wonderful job with it. So
good, yeah.
Ann and Madison, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi.
And what can we do for you?
Well, I have a family member who is dairy-free, mm-hmm. and desserts are very difficult, and I'm wondering if she has any dessert recipes and even some good vegetable recipes without dairy.
Veggie sides, for example. Okay.
Well, on my website, I have one of my favorite dairy-free, and it's actually vegan. It's actually gluten-free as well. It's under my holiday side dishes on the website, and it's a quinoa with roasted butternut squash.
Ooh.
So quinoa is not only it's called a super grain because it has so many good things in it, but in the olden days, about 4 years ago, nobody really knew that much about all these different grains. And quinoa has become one of the ones that is used a lot because it is gluten-free. And it also has a lot of nutrients. And in this case, the roasted butternut squash is made ahead. You just roast the little cubes in the oven. I like to drizzle a little Door County maple syrup on it. And then you toss the quinoa with some fresh herbs and the butternut squash. And I think even you're not people who can have dairy and gluten will enjoy this. But that's
good.
Really, it was something that I used to run in my restaurant as a vegetarian dish, and I liked it because it was also vegan. You like to cover things. When you own a restaurant, you like to cover all the bases. This one
right.
was gluten-free, dairy-free, vegan, and vegetarian. So we liked having it on the menu because we hit all the prime spots.
Perfect.
And that's on your site.
That is on my website. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think about dairy-free desserts. You know, you can always do, let me think. Well, I go back to my restaurant. I had a woman that could not eat many things, but she could eat, always made her meringue. And so we would make, we've had meringue swans, which are on my website. If you really want to get Martha Stewart-ish, there is a video on my website on how to make meringue swans. But just meringue with ice cream and some, meringue with some sorbet in the center of it is a nice and pretty dessert.
Okay.
I like that idea.
And meringues can be made ahead of time as well. You know, you can make them and store them at room temperature. I usually put them in a Tupperware container. But the meringue swan recipe is on my site. But if you don't want to be that ambitious and form swans out of your meringue, just make little meringue kind of nests that you could put some sorbet in, and the sorbet would be dairy-free.
Okay.
All
perfect.
Right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Ann. Appreciate your call. I love your title for you have online cooking classes,
mm-hmm.
and that's part of one of your online cooking classes.
Yep, I have about, I think six or seven on there online, and the swan preparation is on there. And I think if somebody is trying to make them, it's nice to look at it first. So that's a nice one to look at. Another fun one for the holidays, I have a salmon Wellington on there, and you can make individual salmon Wellington. So instead of beef Wellington, you're using a fresh salmon instead, and the mousse that I put on top has some chopped up shrimp in it, so it's really kind of a pretty presentation as well. It would be nice for a New Year's Eve. And for those of you who get the pasta maker for Christmas, there is a homemade pasta cooking class online. It shows you how to make homemade pasta using the attachment that goes with a KitchenAid mixer.
Talking today with Terry Milligan, culinary instructor and writer, has a wonderful website as well. She really knows her stuff when it comes to cooking, and we're zeroing in a bit on holiday cooking with her today. Questions for her, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post a question and or photo on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post there. And speaking of that, oh, my goodness. Terry, I hope you have a chance to look at our website.
Oh, I'll have to.
Our Facebook page, I should say. Cindy has sent a photo of a veggie sub with a red pepper tongue and olive eyes.
Oh, I got to get on there. Well, that sounds fun. I've got to tell you what, I did this cheese ball article. We made cheese ball mice, and they have olive eyes. So they're kind of cute, little individual cheese mice.
Oh.
I'll have to go on there. Let's get on you. Oh, that's funny.
And then Heidi had a great dairy-free dessert she posted as well, a cranberry lemon curd tart with ginger snap crust.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
And it looks wonderful, too. That is also on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. So I hope, as you listen to the show, I hope you have a chance to go to the page and take a look at both of those. And I'm pretty sure at least the cranberry lemon curd tart recipe is right there on the Facebook page. It's really pretty, too.
Well, cranberries are always a fun thing to do around this time of year. Many people don't know that, or maybe they do. Wisconsin is the largest producer of cranberries in the country. So we hold that title.
I always have a bag of cranberries in the freezer. I've mentioned mm-hmm. this before on the show. When I do pancakes, a lot of times I'll pull some frozen cranberries, a handful out, and crush them up a bit and throw them in the pancake batter.
Well, one of my leftover recipes that I do for Thanksgiving is turning that cranberry sauce into a topping for pancakes the next day and using any leftover pumpkin pie filling to make pumpkin pancakes for it.
Ooh, is that?
And you could do that with waffles as well. Put a little of that pumpkin, even if it's pumpkin pie, scoop out a little bit and put it into the batter. And you get a little pumpkin pie for your breakfast.
I love that idea. Oh, man. Terry Milligan, our guest. By the way, you can go to her website just by going at my Facebook page. If you're on the Facebook page to look at those recipes, you can click right on her site. But her site is chefterrymilligan.com, and Terry is T-E-R-R-I.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Milligan, M-I-L-L-I-G-A-N. So ChefTerryMilligan.com, that's the place to go to get to her site. And I really hope you get a chance to get to the site because there are lots of really good things. It's worth it just to go to see the logo, which I think is beautiful, a beautiful logo, but there's lots of great information on there as well. We have, by the way, an email from Deb in Chippewa Falls. Who says, I write down everything from keeping track of my menu as well as guests and seating to temperature and timing.
Mm-hmm.
So she even, her guests and how she seats them. More importantly, I collect those so I look back in past years for amounts and what I served and what went well and what did not go well.
She's kind of running her own restaurant in her house there, because that's what you do in a restaurant, too. You figure out what sells and what doesn't. So that's a nice way to do it and keep track. It's also nice if you have people that come a lot to your house. There are a lot of folks that have different dietary restrictions. As the lady before said, she had someone who can't have dairy. It's kind of nice to have a little index of your friends that come the most often and know things that they can't have. So you do always have something. It's so bad to have a party and then find out you have everything and there's somebody who can't have anything that you served.
Yeah,
Yeah, it's nice to know ahead of time if you have a vegan, vegetarian, somebody who can't have gluten. So you do make sure you accommodate those guests.
Absolutely. And Deb also says she keeps all that information in folders by event and holiday with the recipes and the notes. She is organized.
She is so organized to the max. She's giving Martha Stewart a run for her money.
And you know, it's kind of funny. We're right now, Jim Fleming's reading Michelle Wilgen's book, Bread and Butter, about some high-end restaurants. And they talk about, as you just said, they talk about notes on, you know, what works and what doesn't. But they also have, many of them had notes on their clients.
Oh, I did. I did for sure. I was mentioning the swan that I made before I had. When I had the restaurant, I had a woman that was, we were the only restaurant she would eat at, and she was from Chicago because she knew I knew exactly what she couldn't have, and there was a lot she couldn't have. It basically was almost everything but wild game. She could have game, and she could have sorbet, but I found out it couldn't be a tropical fruit sorbet.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So I ended up one day, I made her, she was coming, and I made her quail, and I had cherry sauce on it. She couldn't have gluten, so I thickened it with cornstarch. And she wouldn't eat it because I didn't have this down. She was Jewish, and she couldn't have corn, and it was Passover.
Oh!
So I had to add that to her list. Luckily, I could remake it real quick. But having clients, that's what makes a good restaurant and a good hostess, to know what your guests can have.
Oh, absolutely. Having a lot of fun today talking with Terry Milligan, a culinary instructor and writer. Go to her website at chefterrymilligan.com and take a look at all the things she's got. Visiting with her about holiday cooking, and I hope you'll join in with your own experiences, your own questions, your own comments. I'd love to hear your experiences, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call, or you can email us at talk@WPR.org, or go to our website at the Larry Mehler Show Facebook page, I should say, not website, Facebook page, the Larry Mehler Show, and you can post a photo, as some folks have done, and or recipe or a question. Love to hear from you. Larry Mehler here with Judith Sears Poisson on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you so much for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Having a lot of fun today talking with Chef Terry Milligan about holiday cooking. Again, you can join in with your questions, comments, or experiences, or maybe you've got a great idea to share with us for some holiday cooking. Again, the number 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. Again, love to hear from you. On the Facebook page, a couple of posts that are interesting. Marita has a question. She says, I make peanut brittle and always have leftover shreds of the hardened syrup. Do you have any suggestions for using those hardened shreds?
The little pieces that are left. What I like to do, actually, is put them in a food processor or a blender and pulverize them and then just sprinkle them over ice cream.
Oh, that's a good idea. I like that.
Or even over oatmeal or something like that, you know, just kind of a little crunchy sweetness on there. But I know what she talks about. You get those little crumbles, and what do you do? But that's what I like to do.
And we also have from Heidi, who has a great dairy free side. She makes a cream soup recipe with almond milk.
Mm-hmm.
But she has. She also posted the best green bean casserole ever. No need for canned soups. Ever since she's perfected her homemade version of condensed cream of chicken soup, she uses it in her green bean casserole.
And so I don't have it up. She uses the almond milk.
I bet she. Yeah.
Well, that there, and so many folks are using the products that are there. There's so many dairy-free products out there, from almond milk to, you know, soy coconut milk. I was at Walmart yesterday, and they had cashew milk, which I've made and heard of, but I never saw it actually as a product that a consumer could pre-purchase. So lots of those nut milks are very popular and very nice to work with.
Somebody mentioned to me the other day they had wanted to make a squash soup but didn't have a blender.
Mm-hmm.
Can you make a squash soup? How do you make a squash soup without a blender?
Well, you know, the only thing you could do if you don't have a blender, or what I like to use for these things, is using the immersion blender, which goes right into the pot.
Yeah.
Those are those long sticks. That's really worth the money. They're not that expensive anymore. They're in like the $30 range now. And you can just whip up some soup in a jiffy when you have those, because you don't have to do it in batches. But for somebody who doesn't have that, the only thing I could suggest is using something like a mashed potato masher. You know, you're going to get not a real smooth soup, but you would be able to kind of mash it down a bit. It's going to be more of a
chunky soup.
Yeah, but it's a little hard to make a soup like that without a blender or an immersion blender. But that would be my only suggestion. Unless a listener has a different idea, but that's what I could suggest.
We have an email from Jim in Mequon who says, thanks for a great show. It says, for a change, several years ago, I made for our Christmas dinner crawfish cornbread dressing.
Mm.
A recipe from Paul Prudhomme's cookbook, mm-hmm. but using shrimp instead of crawfish. And it has become a favorite. If you can't find the recipe, there are some good ones online. My trick is to boil the raw shell on shrimp and use the water for my stock.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great suggestion. You should always use, even if you took the shrimp out of the shells before, if you needed them raw for something, keep those shells and make stock out of them. If you don't have time while you're cooking, though, you can freeze the shells and make stock another time. We did that all the time in the restaurant. We'd have a bucket in the freezer that we'd throw shrimp shells and lobster shells. And then when we had time, because we were probably doing this on New Year's Eve week, when we had time after, we would make stock and then just freeze it. And that was that's an easy way to kind of keep those things until you have time to make the stock. But so many people throw those things away, and you can whip that into a beautiful stock to make, as he does with his dressing, or you could make a soup or something later for the winter.
You know, I would often, if we had a chicken with a skin, I would take the skin off and carefully take it off and then freeze it for later use. And then if I had a pheasant or grouse or something, I'd pull that skin out and put that on top of the bird to as during cooking.
Yes, because a lot of those game birds, especially if you're a hunter and you're really getting those game birds, are not from a farm. They sometimes need a little bit of extra fat so that they stay juicy, because they can get dry quickly, and so that's a nice tip.
Jim and Mequon also said that he also replaced the homemade cornbread part of it with Jiffy box cornbread mix, because it's sweeter and it cuts corners.
Well, you know, that's all about the corner cutting. And, you know, in something like that with a stuffing, who's going to know? And if it's easier, go for it.
Yeah.
I think that's a terrific idea, and it is sweeter and it's easier.
Well, yeah. So he's got a shrimp cornbread recipe. And he bakes it all in a casserole dish, and that's a traditional now, a tradition for them, a Christmas side.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds terrific. And the shrimp instead of crawfish is a nice alternative also. When I had a restaurant, could get crawfish, but it's not an easy thing to find. And sometimes you have to do a little change up on these recipes when they ask for things that in your area just aren't things that you can easily find.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking with Terry Milligan today, culinary instructor, about holiday cooking. Again, join in at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Or else go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show and you can post a photo, question, or comment there. We'd certainly love always love to hear from you. I'm having a really having a ball here talking with Terry, and I hope you're enjoying listening in. So join in with the conversation. Love to hear from you. You did mention, and we talked a little bit about this, but you're teaching a class on holiday sides tomorrow at the Milwaukee Public Market.
Yes, at the Milwaukee Public Market tomorrow, I'm going to do four different sides. And it's at 5:30. It's a demonstration class. It's $29 a person and includes a tasting of everything. But we're going to be doing a Brussels sprout salad that's raw. So what we're going to do is shave the Brussels sprouts either on a mandolin slicer. What I'm going to use is a food processor because it's faster to do for 20-some people. And we're going to toss that with fresh pomegranate seeds and a neat vinaigrette that we're going to make, and then some freshly shredded Parmesan or Manchego cheese is also great on it if you've got a little bigger budget to work with. But it's a really fun salad that's unusual and has a lot of nutrients in it because you're serving it raw. So you're not boiling out anything. Then we're going to be doing one of my favorite soups, which is a butternut squash soup, but it's with ginger. And what I'm making is a preserved ginger, which means it's going to be kind of sweetened, not as crunchy as a crystallized ginger, but I put it in a sugar syrup ahead of time and sweeten it, and then I puree it, and I make that my base for the sweetness in the soup.
Oh, that sounds very good.
And I put some fresh pears in it as well, and then when I puree it, the pears get pureed into it. So that's a neat recipe. And then the side that I'm doing is what I talked about before with the zucchini and the red peppers and the tomatoes. And then the last thing, the last thing I'm making is a neat roll. It's sweet potato crescent rolls. So instead of just a regular crescent roll, the base has cooked sweet potatoes in it.
Wow.
And I'm going to put a little bit of five spice powder in it to give it a little different taste. Five spice powder has a little bit of black pepper, cinnamon, cloves. It's a mixture of a neat blend of spices to put into it.
Oh, but, boy, would that be good, warm, served warm with a meal?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Some nice little spiced butter. Yep, that's what we're going to do. In fact, I've got to make some spiced butter after I get off the phone.
Well, you mentioned Brussels sprouts again, and I'm one of these people who loves Brussels sprouts. Sometimes I'm not successful picking the right Brussels sprouts when I go to the store or even sometimes to the farmer's market.
Well, you want to look for ones that don't have blemishes on them. So have you can always peel away a little bit of the top, but you want to make sure that they don't have a blemish. And look on the bottom of them and make sure they're not real, real dry, because that means they've been cut a long time and it won't be as fresh. If you're lucky in the summertime, at least up here in Door County at one of our many markets, I've purchased the sprouts still on the, I don't know what it's called.
The vine or the...
It's sort of.
Or the stalk, I guess you'd say.
The stalk. I think you'd call it a stalk. And this summer I actually got some at one of the markets, and they were purple Brussels sprouts, and I had never seen those before. And they stayed purple, so they were like little baby purple cabbages when I cooked them.
Oh, and they taste the same, or...?
They did. They had a little different taste, but not anything substantial. They were just cute. I couldn't pass them up, and they were on the stalk, so it made it even more fun.
And Brussels sprouts are so good for you.
And they're coming into vogue. As you said, you use them now, and more people are using Brussels sprouts. So everything from roasting them easily, you can pan roast them, you can roast them in the oven. My 6 in 60 article has them roasted in the oven and then put on a little skewer with a piece of roasted red bell pepper, so they're kind of holiday looking with red and green. And then I make a little dipping sauce that has some hazelnut, or you could use walnut oil as well in the sauce. It's a little kind of fun thing to do.
And yeah, it's wonderful. And do you roast beets as well?
Oh, I roast lots of beets. I do lots of things with beets. I make beet burgers where I shred them and make them into a vegetable burger. I do the beets in juices. I do beets roasted. Beets. I love beets.
I can't do a food show without mentioning beets because I love beets, especially grilled.
Available on the beets too, especially at those farmers markets. You know, you can get from red, you can get beautiful pink ones now, and orange and yellow. So they can really make a beautiful salad with all those colors.
You know, we had I had a great idea here from a Facebook comment from Stephen, and we were talking earlier about if you didn't have a blender and coming up with different ways to do it. And Stephen says, you know, you could use a food mill instead of a blender. Actually, this is a better solution as the soup is smoother. And, you know, a Foley food mill?
Yeah, I can see that. That's great. A great suggestion if you have a food mill.
Well, and you know, this day and age,
when we're
getting more and more people going back to canning, you're probably going to see more of the food mills around. So, boy, this is a lot of fun. We're talking today with Terry Milligan, culinary instructor, writer, former owner, and executive chef at the Inn at Christopher's in Sister Bay. Talking about holiday cooking with her. She's going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. We certainly invite you to join in with your questions or comments. Again, you can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'll be back with our guest right after this look at the news. Holiday meals can be fancy or relaxed, sometimes with a handful of people or maybe a large crowd. I think the important thing is good food shared by people you love or like a whole lot. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Really happy to have Chef Terry Milligan with us. She is a culinary instructor and writer, former owner and executive chef at the Inn at Christopher's in Sister Bay. And Terry, once again, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. While we were on break, I was busy getting the lobster quesadilla recipe out so I could put it on our website.
Well, good, because we've already had people say, wondering,
Well, tell them I have to get off the radio. So I don't want to type and talk at the same time.
But it'll be up there very soon. So that's wonderful. And I'm going to be copying it down myself. Yannick in Door County.
Is this Yannick Perlman?
Yes, it is.
There aren't many Yannicks.
Yep, it's me. And I was driving, and I heard the radio show, and Terry, I was really happy to hear you were on, and I called because I have a question that I've been wanting to ask you for years.
Oh, good. See, close by, but has to go on the radio to talk to me.
Yeah, I know. That's pretty bad of me. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Directly. Well, I wanted to know if you made any dishes with hard ciders, and I know that you used to do some specialty meals with our hard ciders, and I was just curious if you had any holiday recipes that include a dry hard cider like the one we produce at Island Orchard Cider.
Yes, well, and Yannick has a lovely company up here in Door County, the Island Cider, Hard Ciders, and I do cook with some of them. One of the things I like to do is use one of your cherry hard ciders with a fruit. I kind of make dried fruits that I kind of steam them in. I used to use port, and I tried it with your cherry cider, and it worked great, and then I put it over ice cream. And it's delicious. Yeah, so that's kind of a fun recipe with a local ingredient for a dessert and can be made ahead. So that's one that comes to mind for sure. I haven't had a chance to work a lot yet with your ciders, even though I should, but that's one thing that I had done at the restaurant. You were just starting out when I had my restaurant, so I didn't get to work with it as much as I wanted. But for those of you who might visit Door County, this is a great location to go to up in Ellison Bay. All the fruit is from Door County, and it's from Washington Island, if I'm not mistaken, the pears.
All right.
I understand you were so popular this year, you ran out of local pears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
so
we ran out of our pear cider. And,
yes.
But
hard ciders are becoming very in vogue, and they're gluten-free. So for those people that are looking for something as a gluten alternative, beer obviously isn't, unless you get a gluten-free beer, isn't something those folks can have. So this was a nice alternative and a nice way when I work in Door County and throughout the state to incorporate local ingredients.
You know, as I'm sitting here thinking, listening to you and Yannick, I'm wondering if a cider would work well as part of a marinade.
I think it would, and I think it also might work well in a soup. You know, a little of that apple hard. They make an apple hard cider. Might be kind of a fun addition to a maple butternut squash soup, and a little bit of that pear cider in there would be a nice addition. So I like to experiment, and sometimes they work out. Most of the times they work out. Occasionally we have one we don't want to do again. But the cider is a new thing that a lot of people are working with, those hard ciders.
Yeah, Yannick,
that's great.
I want to get my hands on some of your pear hard cider.
It's delicious.
That's good. Well, thank you. Will you have at your website that recipe for the dessert you just said?
After I do the lobster quesadillas.
Okay. That's great. I'll look forward to it. And thank you
so
very
much.
So
we'll get it on there for you. So
all right.
Put that on. So, yeah, I've got a lot of work to do today. I didn't know I was going to have to work all day.
Thank you, Yannick, for calling. Appreciate your call very much. Stella in Sturgeon Bay. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I happened to hear the email regarding using a food mill for pureeing a squash soup.
Yeah.
And, Larry, you mentioned a Foley food mill.
Yeah.
And I just want to give give an update on food mills.
Yeah.
We used to use a Foley food mill, and we found an OXO. It's O-X-O food mill. It is a vast improvement over a Foley.
It is. Oh.
Oh, it is. It's got three legs that are rubber-coated that sit on top of the bowl without any kind of wiggling around. It does not have the wire on the bottom that scrapes and splatters food all over the place. And it has three assorted screens, so you can use very fine to, a bit coarser. Mm-hmm. And it completely comes apart very easily for cleaning and stores very easily as well.
Well,
we just love it.
I have not heard of this. This is one of the things I love about doing this show. You always learn something new every single day.
Yeah,
well,
it's about $50.
Mm-hmm.
And in Door County here, it's available locally at one of the, I'm blanking on the name, but the kitchen store.
Oh, in
Sturgeon Bay.
The Cornucopia?
Cornucopia, right.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have to have someone from Door County to help you out on that one. Well, I don't know the brand of mine, but I know that food mills are coming back in vogue, as you said, because so many people are canning. But one thing I wanted to mention, if you do have one, they make terrific mashed potatoes because you get a really smooth potato putting it through those food mills. And so that's another use that you could use that for.
Wow. I've got that could be something for my Christmas list. People are, you know, a few people are saying, well, what do you want for Christmas? And I don't know. I haven't gotten any ideas, but I don't have an immersion blender either.
Oh, I love my immersion blender. Yeah, that's terrific. And my decadent luxury was that I bought a Blendtec blender, and those are extremely expensive, but they work like a dream. And I went through Vitamix versus Blendtec, and they're both wonderful products, but I ended up with a Blendtec.
Stella, thank you so much.
Thanks.
OXO Food Mill. I have to look that one up online and take a look at it.
I know the brand, but because that's a brand that I'm familiar with, but I wasn't familiar with the mill, so I'll have to look at that.
Yeah, I'll take a look at that. We had an email, quite a few emails, actually. Email from Grant, who says, I make kimchi, and today I'm making Brussels sprout kimchi from Bon Appetit magazine.
Oh, interesting. You know what? I think I have that magazine sitting on my counter. I'll have to look at that. Kimchi is very in vogue, obviously, and though I have not taken it, there are they teach quite a bit at the Milwaukee Public Market classes on how to make your own. So for those who are want to learn and have a little class with it, you can sign up on the Milwaukee Public Market site to get a mailing list, and they'll tell you when they have another class on making your own.
And you know, somebody's going to say, well, what the heck is kimchi?
Well, it's traditional Korean dish. It's fermented, usually cabbage. It's usually Napa cabbage and sometimes that daikon radish, which gives it a little zest. So there's a lot of recipes online if you want to try to make it yourself. But as I said, if you want to get somebody to show you in person, there's some classes around that you could take.
We had, by the way, you can join in with your questions or comments or experiences at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call or email at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Love to hear from you. And we got open lines to get you on pretty quickly here via phone. Email from, John. I've been baking bread for over 30 years, and I've just now started baking true sourdough breads. The flavors from sourdough are so different than yeasted breads and more flavorful. Use the Tartine cookbook. Is it Tartine?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
From San Francisco.
Yes.
And says outstanding.
Well, I've not worked that much with sourdough, so I'm not the best person to address that, but that is a terrific book for those of you who want to learn how to make really artisan-type breads. And that is one of the premier bakeries in the San Francisco, California area.
You know, I had a graduate student. I'm, of course, a professor here at the university, too, and I had a graduate student come from Alaska to work on a master's and PhD, and brought his family, and also he brought some of his sourdough starter.
Mm-hmm.
And it had been in the starter, I forget how many years old it had been. It was old, you know, like 20 years or something. And so he gave me some, and then I had it in my refrigerator and used it and loved it for a few years, and then I went on vacation, and it must have been the day I left, the refrigerator quit.
Oh, no.
And came home to something didn't smell right, and I opened up the refrigerator door, and this is in August. It was a big mistake.
Yeah.
And I lost my sourdough starter.
Well, I'm looking, you know, there are recipes online to make your own starter, so maybe you need to make your own and start again and then give it to some friends.
Yeah, I guess I should do that. I really, it was fun to be able to say, well, this is a starter that originated in Alaska, in Barrow, Alaska. So,
well, maybe you have a listener who can help you out with that. There's some Alaska sourdough starter might come your way.
Yeah, John Trent, my former student, he's back in Alaska. If you're listening,
I need some more of that.
I need some more of that.
And hopefully have a new refrigerator.
Yes, for sure. We had an email from Jenny in La Crosse wondering what a good alternative for an electric Would a good alternative be an electric mixer and a bit of milk-like substance such as half and half?
Oh, for pureeing the soup?
Yeah, I think so.
Probably. I think you could do pretty good with that, with an electric mixer. If it's like a butternut squash type soup, you just want to make sure you've really got softened squash so it's easy to puree. With something like that, I would say for your squash, make sure you roast the squash in the oven and scoop them out so that it's more of that pulp rather than doing little cubes that you might have to give you some difficulty in the mixer. But I think that might work. That's a good alternative.
You know, I'm getting, I don't know if it's lazy or if I just to cut time, I'm starting my squash in the microwave.
A lot of people do that. And in fact, tomorrow I'm going to show two different ways to do it, and one is in the microwave. You can do them, you can start it in the microwave and finish it in the oven, or you can actually make just cubes of the butternut squash and raw, put them in the microwave in a microwavable bowl, a little bit of water in the bottom so it steams, and a little plastic wrap on top with a few vents in it. You put that in and then do a couple of minutes at a time and check the squash, but that's a way of steaming it in the microwave.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And you know, anymore, my daughter, who's 11, loves twice baked potatoes, and I'm so lazy now. I do the whole thing in the microwave oven, and you can have a twice baked potato in about six mm-hmm. minutes.
Yep, and you know, some of them even come now actually wrapped in saran wrap, so they're ready to go, and you just pop them in. You don't even have to put anything on them.
Oh, well, so I make my own, but I
know. I was surprised when I saw, well, in Door County I find them because we get a lot of vacationers up here, and so I guess if you're on vacation, you can go to the Piggly Wiggly up here and get them pre-done like that.
Why not? If you can, and if they taste good, why not?
Exactly.
You have some great ideas for holiday desserts, and we talked a little bit about this. I love the swan idea, but about having a dessert that's pretty enough to be a centerpiece.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's kind of twofold things off your list. Then you get a centerpiece for your dessert table, or your actual could put it on your dinner table, and you also get a dessert. So you get a little bit of both. And I always feel you can mess up many recipes, but don't mess up dessert, because it's the last thing people are going to have, and that's the first thing they're going to remember, because that's what they ended their meal with. So make sure your dessert is something special.
I love that. I was thinking, you know, this year, I don't know if it was lazy. It was just a time issue because we were invited to friends' places. I went to our local bakery, Batch Bakery, which does such a wonderful job, and got the most beautiful apple pie. The top that they spend a lot of time making, just this absolutely lovely top for the apple pie. And then they also have, only for holidays, blue cheese walnut bread.
Mm.
A bread that's infused with blue cheese and walnut. And oh my goodness, is it wonderful.
Sounds great and unusual.
Yeah, and unusual, but I can tell you that the apple pie was one of those centerpieces. It was so beautiful. You just, oh, man, that has to go in the center of the table.
Well, one of the dishes that I have on my website is a traditional, I call it the Christmas log cake, but a bûche de Noël, which is the cake that looks like a log. And you shape it by making a sheet cake and then filling it and rolling it. And the one I have on my website made me think of one of our earlier callers who made peanut brittle and wanted to know what to do with that leftover brittle. I have a little bit of shards of, I think I made walnut brittle for it. But the leftover I did pulverize and I sprinkled it on top of the log. But this is another one that's more for the advanced set, making a bûche de Noël. But something that's easier is just pretty cookies. And I like to make, I saw on your Facebook page you have my biscotti on there. And that's a fun recipe to make, gingerbread biscotti, and put them on a cake pedestal, and put a big bow around the cake pedestal, and then everybody can enjoy a cookie at the end of the meal, but it also serves as a pretty centerpiece as well. And something like a biscotti is something that's easy to make and also easy to make ahead.
Oh, yeah, that's wonderful. And, you know, one of the things we have not talked about today, and I really would like to get to it, is are the leftovers, because there's, you know, there are some creative ways, I think. I'm sure you have some creative ways to use your leftovers.
Mm-hmm. I just did an article in the Journal on leftovers, and we did everything from a pulled turkey sandwich that we made a quick barbecue sauce to, again, a quesadilla, no lobster in this one, but we used leftover turkey, the cranberries, it's kind of, and some brie cheese on top of it to make a funky little quesadilla for game day. Also an easy appetizer to make.
Boy, that sounds good, and I've got some of that cheese sitting in my refrigerator that I have not, we didn't go through a whole.
And with a quesadilla like that, if you don't have brie cheese, you could really, you know, see what cheese you have left over from a cheese display. You could use a Gouda or a Havarti, anything that might melt nicely.
Sounds wonderful. I'm wondering, now here you've got on your site, you've got your class, you have information about your classes. I know you've got this event tomorrow, mm-hmm. and mention that again and talk about that for people who might be in the Milwaukee area.
Sure. It is a class on holiday sides, so it is at the Milwaukee Public Market. For those folks that aren't familiar where the market is, it's in the Third Ward area, and you get free parking, so that's nice. And we're doing the four different sides, the sweet potato, five spice powder crescent rolls, the Brussels sprout and apple salad, the butternut squash soup with the preserved ginger, and then that tomato red bell pepper zucchini gratin. It's $29. You can sign up on the market's website, which is just milwaukeepublicmarket.org, or give them a call at 414-336-1111, and they'll sign you up. Only $29. It's a kind of a fun way to start your holiday season out. I get a lot of mothers and daughters and friends and couples who come, and it's about 90 minutes, so it's 5:30 to 7. You still have time to go out to eat or enjoy doing some shopping at the public market.
Well, that sounds wonderful. And then the other events and things that you do, you've got up on your on your website.
If anybody who's in the Fox Valley area, on the 20th of January, I'm doing a Foods for Romance class at a place called the Wire Whisk. It's right outside of the Fox Valley Mall. And we're going to do swans, but we're going to do a different swan. We're going to do a cream puff swan for Valentine's Day, a very fun risotto that I'm going to make with lemon and asparagus, and then a Caesar salad, and I'm going to top it with a Parmesan crisp. You might have seen these on some of the food shows. They make them. They're little Parmesans that you put in the oven, kind of a disc, and then you take it out, put it over a rolling pin, and when they crisp up, you get this nice little garnish for a salad.
Oh.
So we're doing that. Then in a little later, I'm doing a couple more classes at the public market, and there one is a hands-on class. I just started this series. It's called Cook the Book. And I'm taking different books that are my favorite cookbooks, and we're going to do six or seven recipes out of those books. My first one is on the 21st of January, and it's at the public market at night at 5 o'clock. And it's 14 people only in these hands-on classes.
Yep.
And we're going to do seven different recipes from Todd English's book called Olives. And Todd English is a really well-known and very handsome chef from the New England area.
Oh. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. And, of course, everything, all of the information on this and how to sign up is available on your website.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this has been a real joy, Terry. I'm so pleased that you were able to be with us today for the whole 90 minutes. I'm looking forward to that lobster quesadilla.
I know. I have a little pile now of things I must do today.
Thank you again so much, and I look forward to talking with you again.
Well, thank you, and thank you for all the listeners who called in. I appreciated hearing from them.
Oh, boy. Tell you what, she's wonderful, isn't she? I could go on all day with her. Terry Milligan, culinary instructor and writer, former owner and executive chef at the Inn of Christopher's in Sister Bay. Her website, chefterrymilligan.com. And if you go to our Facebook page, go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, you got a link directly there. And also we've got some of those recipes that we were talking about. And she'll have that lobster quesadilla recipe up pretty soon, I'll bet. Stay with us.